That was like the cheesiest open.
That's okay.
That we've done yet. Welcome. Hey, everybody.
Hey, you're wearing Marsha today.
And you're wearing Panda.
What is your favorite thing about wearing Marsha?
That this yarn is the softest yarn I own. And this is the softest garment that I own. It feels, so it's cold here. It's Florida cold. So we have like a high of 60 and lows in the 40s most days. Sometimes it's warmer than that, but it's pretty cold to me. So this sweater is warm in a way that sometimes like a lightweight garment isn't, but it is very lightweight and it's very, very soft. So I don't wear it very often and I have forgotten, like, until I put it on for this recording. I was like, oh my gosh.
Like, oh yeah, I love this actually. Yeah.
Yeah. When you knit a beautiful luxury yarn that's like mostly white into a sample, you aren't allowed to wear it.
It's too scary.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Panda is kind of a similar yarn. What would you say? Similar and not similar, but what would you say your favorite thing about Panda is?
Feeling cool. Feel like a cool kid.
Yeah, the hood on that is super cool.
Yeah. My cousin sent me a picture of myself from 1995. So I'm particularly relishing feeling cool now because I am not cool in this picture from 1995. In fact, I spent a full 45 seconds trying to figure out why I look so weird, but that was my mom and I was the dork next to her. So, I was like, I don't remember my hair being this long in 1995.
Nope. That was Jen's mom.
I never had long curly hair ever. Never. That was mom. Yeah.
It is true. Whenever I look at pictures now of my childhood, I'm like, my parents are so young. And then I'm like, damn it. I'm older now.
Yeah,
than they were.
But, you know, I think you're right about white, right? So lots of people know I teach a garment class on what to wear, what to make that you'll actually wear. And for me, that's such a big part about sustainability. And a lot of times white can make us not wear our garments, right?
Yeah. I mean, if we're afraid to get something to ruin something, I will say my personal wardrobe is almost all light colors. When we do the wash, you know, you separate your lights and darks. And basically the dark load is all Candace's clothes and the light load is like all mine. There's a few exceptions, you know, it's not like I don't own black jeans, but I realized even when I was like pretty young that I really liked wearing light colors. I think they look better on me. And so I got one, like just used to it that sometimes you're gonna spill something. Two, good at laundry.
You gotta
know how to get the things out. And then three, just like more careful when I eat, like more aware of if I'm wearing something. And if I'm really worried, I have used a napkin as a bib. I don't care. I don't care if I look dorky eating the thing. I want to look good after.
Right? Especially if it's going to take 80 hours to make the shirt, right?
Yes. But, you know, my Alice tee is essentially white. It's like a very pale gray, blue, pink mix. But I do wear it a lot. But I can launder that. I can put that through the wash and the dryer. It's like a lot easier to deal with. So,
yeah.
Depends. But the reason I'm not allowed to wear this is different. But what were you going to say about wearing light colors in your wardrobe class?
Basically just that, you know, if we want to make fewer clothes, which I find is the key to sustainability, it's just less stuff. Mm-hmm. That making things that you actually wear is key. And then part of that is figuring out where you're going to wear things and matching the circumstances that you need that garment to do for you, like to the garment itself, right? So like if I want to wear something all day, every day, it needs to be a dark color because I am not as graceful as like you, couch. My friend.
Like the couch. I entered into my relationship with my stepkids and my girlfriend with, like, you know, a dusty pink couch and, like, all of these things that Candace is like, when we shop for furniture now, she's just like, no, no. But I think, so you basically summed up our whole sustainability conversation in one sentence there. Thanks. But we've been talking about sustainability with y'all online this week, which has been a really enriching conversation. Thanks for participating in that with us. And whenever this episode is airing, it was the week that we were talking about sustainability on Instagram that we filmed it. And a lot of people have said the same thing. Like, rather than necessarily worrying about every single skein of yarn being like the most perfectly sustainable skein of yarn, looking at consumption is always a huge part of sustainability, right? Reduce, reuse, recycle. And in the reuse category, I really like to think of like that meaning many uses need to come out of the things that I make. So I do knit a lot of light garments, but I am willing to wear light colors. And I know that about myself. And I know I might even wear those light colors more regularly. And so that to me is important. But I do also consider when I'm making a light garment, how comfortable am I going to be wearing this in the way I imagine wearing it? And like a washable cotton tee gets a lot more use in my wardrobe than like my Therese dress, which is a very pale tencel. But that is for more special occasions. And in those times that I wear it, I'm able to treat it more delicately, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Or like we have this upcoming collection, we'll be doing pre-sales on in a week or two. And in that, you know, we've really focused on athleisure clothes that are designed to take you throughout all parts of your life. So both of the designs that we're wearing are part of that collection. But we also have Breaker in that collection. And she's put together with Superwash, right? Because I knew that I wanted something that I could pair with my leggings, on my walks, over a sports bra, against the skin when I'm being active, right? So she's active wear. And I plan to spend my winter walking outside, getting sweaty, wearing her. And, you know, I do want to be able to wash her pretty good if I need to. And that's not a consideration I might have for a piece that I plan to layer over other garments more.
Yeah. Or like this athleisure piece, Marsha or Panda, are meant for more like after your sweaty time. You're going to take a walk and... Oh, we are going to need to pause 1 second. The maintenance guys showed up at my house.
Okay.
Sorry about that, y'all. So what I was saying about Marsha and Panda in our athleisure collection, these are pieces that we imagine you layering over like your yoga gear or your active wear that you've just gotten sweaty in. So when you're leaving the gym and you've had that moment to towel off or maybe even shower, like what is the cozy layering piece that you're going to grab after your cool down? And so that's a very different use than like a sweatshirt style sweater that I want to wear on my walk or maybe even bring with me like for my run and layer up and down, you know? I don't know if I would run a Breaker, but I would definitely bring it on a power walk.
Yeah. You know, I feel really unapologetic about these designs too, because they're not going to be as universally reached for maybe as something you can wear to the office, but they're unapologetically for you, the maker, right? They're extremely comfortable. They're playful. They're experimental. You know, there are tons of Aran sweaters you can wear everywhere, right? So, you know, in some ways, I feel like this collection of designs is a little bit more, but a little bit more niche and also more useful than some of the other things that I'm afraid to wear.
Yeah. And when we talk about, so I think that one, like if we're really looking at sustainability, then we have to focus on how our needs and how our lives and our lifestyles are changing. Two, if you look at the world of like knitting and hand knit garments, there were so many and are still so many designs that are released with the phrase like, you know, layers great on your way to the office and then out to happy hour after. But it is 2023 and so many people now are not going into an office. You know, we're working from home a lot more. We're looking to be comfortable. We want to be put together. Yeah. And I would wear this on a call. I mean, listen, I've never had an office job. I don't know what you're supposed to wear.
That, you're supposed to wear Marsha. Yeah. You're nailing it.
Yeah. I think you could wear Marsha on a conference call in today's day and age when you are working from home. Like I'm pretty sure the requirement is just to look like nicely put together. But you know, we're all moving more and more into like leisure wear as everyday wear and having knits that actually match those pieces. I think that's one of the most sustainable things that we can do. You mentioned superwash yarn. That was a spicy topic. More so than I thought. Like y'all really had a lot to say. And I agree with a lot of points. If we're going to compare superwash yarn to non-superwash wool, to organic cotton, it doesn't hold up as well in the sustainability category, talking about a sustainable purchase. However, if you, and people had this to say as well, if you compare superwash yarn to the acrylic sweaters that are being sold to a sweatshirt that someone buys from a big box store that is made of like almost all acrylic fiber, superwash wool is a lot more sustainable than that choice. A superwash wool sweater that you've made yourself is going to last many, 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 many more years than a zip up hoodie that you buy from fast fashion. Yes, yeah. A zip up hoodie from fast fashion can last several years, but I have worn through plenty of them, even high end ones, far before I would wear through a superwash sweater.
Yeah.
I don't think I ever have worn through a superwash sweater. Have you?
No, I haven't.
Socks, yes.
I don't have that many sweaters for myself, so I'm not necessarily being fair. But the only one that I have that I actually wear from before I started designing is superwash, and there's not a thing wrong with it. You know, somebody told me once, I don't stash superwash. And I have adopted that as a personal rule, too. I will buy it to knit with it if I have a project I'm going to cast on, but I don't stash it. And for me, that feels like a really good balance. I'm getting the properties of that yarn when I need and want them. And I'm not kind of contributing unnecessarily to a supply chain that is maybe less desirable. Whereas if I'm stashing non-superwash wool, you know, particularly U.S. grown, so it didn't have to go overseas, milled here in the U.S., like that I can feel pretty good about. Like that just counts as like carbon sequestration, right? So
yeah, shout out to Forest Lane Fiber. It's one of the great yarn dyers that we love who's doing domestic wool. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's Emily from Wool and Palette. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Another dyer that we really love. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So this reminds me of a comment that we got from Juliet. Let me read that. So cool. Where is that?
I love the name Juliet. Just saying.
I didn't screenshot Juliet's comment. I'm such a dork. Why am I still the person doing the comments? Juliet said, Juliet Picot Designs, she's another knitwear designer and we're a big fan. And she chimed in on our sustainability conversation and said essentially the same thing. As a designer, she's trying to stash less overall because having a stash is not really in line with the values of sustainability. We have a comment from Emily, who's also a designer, and this is why I didn't screenshot Juliet. So Emily said, a really big part of sustainability for me is just being moderate in the quantity of clothes I make and buy, thinking about longevity and factoring that in when I'm making materials choices. Yes, that sock yarn has some nylon in it, but a pair of socks made with it will last longer than most pure wool yarns and way longer than commercial socks. On the other hand, that pure linen might cost a bit more, but a dress made from it will be a timeless staple and last for years. There's no perfectly pure choices, but simply stepping away from overconsumption does a lot for sustainability. And that's absolutely true. I know that I really try not to add to my stash. Like when I got into knitting in my early 20s is when I like super got into knitting. And that was also in the early aughts, and sustainability was a lot less of a conversation then. Not to say I didn't care about it, but I didn't have the awareness at 22 that I have at 38, you know?
Sure. Yeah.
So I stashed a lot back then. You know, I would participate in all the big sales and I would get excited about different colors. And I still have a lot of that stash. I've given it away. I've donated, but I also keep anything that I could see myself using in the future. So by the time I became a designer, like I've really gotten to a point where I try and only buy for specific projects. Or if I want to try out a yarn, because as designers, it can be really helpful to have some amount of yarns around that might be unusual or that we might be interested in working with. So I'll buy single skeins, but I won't buy sweater quantities without knowing like what sweater that's going to be.
Yeah, I think in a lot of ways, one of the things that contributes to home knitters being able to participate in sustainability is dyers who do repeatable colorways for just that reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a good point. And it's something I've thought about less. I mean, I suppose that, yeah, the way I see it when people are doing these like limited edition colors and stuff is just if it aligns with the time that I get to cast on, then I'll cast it on.
You know?
Marsha is actually a limited edition colorway, but it's one that Sylvia repeats every year. Sylvia is the dyer who made this from Camellia Fiber Company, another brand that we really love. And Sylvia will release Rainbow Sprinkles each June as a fundraiser for the Trevor Project. And so that gives people the opportunity to buy it. And at the same time, it keeps it exciting and keeps that purpose of fundraising like really pure. But I feel like that's such a nice balance where someone is able to like say, well, this isn't the right time for me, but I do know at least this isn't going to be gone forever. I'll have another chance to purchase this yarn. Maybe next year will be a better time.
You know, I think one of the things that we can do to introduce sustainability values into our practice at any budget point is to make things, right? So the more steps you're involved in bringing something from the ground to a long life in your closet, the more you're going to have that as like an awareness of how you treat those clothes differently, right? So at any point along the way, from visiting a farm to cleaning a fleece, spinning wool, dyeing wool, you know, spinning wool, knitting things up, mending and repairing, over dyeing, mending and repairing again, right? The more steps you participate in that process, I think the more you develop like a cognitive muscle memory about what it takes, right? So like I knit about one pair of socks every 2 years and I wear them for 6 to 9 months and they get a big hole in them. And I put them in a basket. So I've been forcing myself. So first of all, like, I'm like, listen, I'm sick of losing my socks, right? Like I always use non-superwash wools. I'm sick of like putting in all this work. I'm not much of a sock knitter. So when I lose a pair, it's like a big deal.
Yeah.
So I'm like, maybe I need nylon, right? Like if I'm going to spend all this money on beautiful socks, like maybe I need to run an experiment and see if nylon puts these into my, you know, closet for longer. So I'm doing that experiment at the same time as making myself mend my socks, right? So doing some experimentation, but also like being involved in those steps. I bought a bunch of sustainably sewn clothing and linen dresses, and I wore them all the time. And one was a light gray. And when it became too spotted to feel good wearing it out in public, I over dyed it, right? So getting involved with your clothes on a more visceral level, checking out some books on mending from the library, like getting involved with that process, then you go and you're like, look at this stuff in my closet that's fast fashion that I'm like, that's ready to throw away because it's not worth the investment in maintaining. And I think something begins to emerge where the discussion about superwash or not superwash becomes truly moot.
Right. Well, and like when you mentioned fast fashion, a lot of these garments are made with fabrics that are so thin and so artificial, you cannot repair them. You cannot mend them. So mending comes out of the question on something that if you can't take a needle and thread to it. And yeah, I think it's really interesting because there are people who are saying like, knitting is my hobby. And so I'm not going to buy anything that's not sustainable for my hobby because it's an unnecessary purchase. However, like I think folks in the One Wild Designs community or people who are really like know what me and Jen might say is like, if you're replacing clothes in your wardrobe, like this is more than a hobby. You know, if I'm making myself a layering tank and I'm using that instead of a fast fashion cami underneath my other garments, I have replaced not just one fast fashion cami, I've replaced like 15 of them over the next 20 years or however long I get wear out of this tank. And I've replaced that with something that I can repair and that I'd be motivated to repair because I actually have a loving relationship with it. I feel like what you're talking about is investment. And, you know, I'm not talking about the economical aspect of it, but I feel like we can go there too. However, even though
I've never... Investing yourself in something, like the act of investing. Yeah.
Investing your time or your money into a garment does give you more of an attachment and more motivation to keep that garment. So I have never been someone that has a huge budget for clothes. I will, though, oftentimes choose to purchase just like one piece or two pieces that are better made if I'm able to, rather than go on a shopping spree of like 10 crappy pieces, you know? Sometimes I don't have a lot of choice in my wardrobe and I can't afford the nicer thing at that time. Like that's just the reality for a lot of us, right? So then I buy the thing that I can afford and I use it as best I can. And I think we need to apply that mentality to our yarn purchases as well, because even if we're looking at less sustainable choices in yarn, it's much more sustainable when you're actually making use of the thing, when you wear the thing.
What's really, really coming up for me right now is I buy a certain kind of pajama and they're inexpensive and they're fast fashion. And after you wash them for 3 months, they're coarse, but they're so soft and silky when they're new. And I really love them. But I buy several pairs a year. I've always thought, I should replace this with like really nice pajamas. But then I'm like, but my pajamas wear out so quick. That seems like a waste of money. And so now I'm like, obviously I should knit myself a set, like a silk pajama set, right? Like that's the use case that we're making.
I recommend it. You know, I've knit myself silk pajamas. I have a silk slip pattern out there, the Renard silk dress. It's one of my first, I feel like I've talked about my patterns so much this episode. Sorry. Just thinking about that back catalog as we get ready to merge our online shop. Right. But the Renard silk dress is one of my first ever patterns. It was, people really, really loved it and still love it. It's much more simple than a lot of the things I design now. And one day I may redesign it. However, the whole point of that garment was to be pajamas. It was to replace my pajamas. And I have slept in it many times. I have two and I sleep in both of them and I wear them like a lot. And I have other hand knit pajamas. I will say if you knit yourself silk pajamas, they're more comfortable than hand knit like cotton when your bum is on them.
Yeah.
I have organic cotton shorts that I've knit myself as part of a pajama set and I do wear them a lot, but when I'm sitting on them, they're not like, you know, you can feel the pearl bumps a little on your butt, which you're either okay with or you're not.
I'm not. Yeah.
But yeah, there's something to be said for like, can we make that investment of time when we don't necessarily have the investment of money? Or if we are investing our money anyway in knitting, I think the thing that gets to me is like, why knit just the same type of thing over and over and over again and amass like 100 of the same style of sweater, right? Is that sustainable? Because how many sweaters do we really need in our wardrobe? And we're going to keep releasing sweater patterns. And I hope people keep buying them. But I hope that when people are knitting our sweaters, they're like finding those 6 perfect sweaters for them that will then last them for several years. And then maybe they decide to replace one because their style has changed. Or maybe something happens and one gets harmed in some way. And so they knit another one. And when you're not knitting sweaters, you know, that's why as a designer, I release tees, I release tanks. Replacing those items in my wardrobe feels really good to me because yeah, that is a sustainable, you know, a sustainable choice for me.
And I also want to throw out there that sustainability is only one axis on which we make decisions, right? We also make decisions about the social world we want to create. We also make decisions, you know, about our financial sustainability. You know, there's just all sorts of axes and values that we bring to knitting because we're whole people. And so, yes, we're talking about sustainability today from an environmental standpoint, but we're also talking about it but I want to specifically name that there are other dynamics and that sustainability is not the only reason to make things or the only valuable lens to use when making a purchasing decision.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Joe Lior did comment and mentioned that I don't have that comment, so I don't know your pronouns, Joe Lior, so I'm going to use they just to cover all bases. However, they said that they're supporting a local dyer who is one of the only local dyers who's a queer dyer also. And that person may or may not be offering superwash yarn or may not be offering sustainable in every aspect, but that dyer is doing some things in a great way and also like supporting other marginalized makers or other local businesses. It's sustainable in the way that like true sustainability has to happen with equality at the same time, in the way that all of these issues are right. Intersectional.
Like exactly.
Jen's saying, and making the best choice for you, especially if you're viewing it through the wider lens of like the best choice for you and your local community, or the best choice for you and your values, whatever it is that is so meaningful to you. Like when we allow these values to filter themselves onto our craft, onto our hobbies, onto our making practice, then that's a good choice. That's a powerful choice, whatever yeah. that driving value is, right?
Yeah. We're whole people and we bring our whole selves to this art form.
Yeah. And we haven't even talked about all of the different types of like sensory issues and things that lead people to choose one type of yarn over another. In the world of making garments, yeah, like you said, it's just a moot point to like be at each other about our yarn choices when we're all engaging in slow fashion and slow making and a really beautiful art form that is at its heart sustainable.
Exactly. Cool.
So let's read one more comment from Woolen Whisker to take us home here. They've said, I also think an important part of the sustainability conversation is knitting what we will actually wear. And for many people, creating a wardrobe that they will wear over and over is the most sustainable choice, rather than buying a fiber they find uncomfortable because it's quote unquote better than ever wearing it, which would be so sad. Also, I wash my knitted items much less than my fast fashion factory clothing, which cuts down on the microplastics problem, which in regards to superwash wool, and which is also a valuable point. Even my like zip up superwash letters that I've made one of Jen's patterns is I wear it in a similar way to the way you described wearing Breaker, and I still rarely need to wash it. It's not stinky. You know, if it's cold enough to have a sweater on, I'm probably not sweating too much. And if it does get a little sweaty, I might still soak it rather than putting it through the washing machine. But knowing that I have the option to do that if I need to do that makes me able to wear that zip up in a lot of contexts that I might not wear something made of non-super wash wool.
I put my Breaker in the washing, or not my Breaker. I put my my letters in the washing machine after I spilled coffee on it.
Did it work?
Yeah, it's just fine.
That's great. Yeah. Yours is really light too.
It's baby pink. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I wasn't even wearing it. No justice.
Coffee is one of the worst offenders.
It is. I know you have a whole blog post about getting coffee out of a Tencel. So maybe we can link to that downstairs in the comments.
I would love to do more blogging on stain removal from other types of fiber, though, because Tencel is pretty unique. And I used vinegar with great effect, white vinegar. It did nothing to the dye. But I don't think that white vinegar would work on all wools. On superwash wool, it probably would.
Yeah, just, somebody wants to write a blog post series for us on stain removal from different dye perspectives and different fiber perspectives and laundry care. Let us know.
Yeah, if you're an expert at laundering your knits, please reach out. Yeah, come be a guest on our newsletter and or blog. We'd love that.
Yeah.
So I think by the time this episode's air, you might actually be able to pre-order the Athleisure collection.
Yeah, either then or like within a day or two. So to do that, here's what we're doing for this launch. If you want to pick up the collection will be available at its best price on presale the last week of December. So the 26th through the 1st. And you'll be able to find that on our website.
Yeah, on onewilddesigns.com. Yeah. And you'll get codes in that presale because you're not getting the patterns yet. The patterns are launching on January 10th and on February 1st. If you purchase the collection during the presale, you will automatically be able to download the patterns. You're going to get codes that would work either on Ravelry or on our website when the patterns are released to download them, I believe.
Yep.
Yep. And you will get, with those codes, you'll get all of the information you need to start sourcing your yarn.
Yep. Yeah. And swatching and all the goodies. So, yeah.
So check it out. We'd love to hear your thoughts on anything that we're doing, saying, quoting.
Yeah. And if you have a different lens on sustainability than the one that we've shared, of course, put it in the comments. We always appreciate the lively conversations you guys bring to the comments section. So we'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, we're coming at it from a very, you know, perfectly imperfect kind of life, doing our best. And we really honor everyone and the choices that you're making towards sustainability. So we're in no way trying to discount someone who is, you know, using that lens as their primary lens. That's awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. Takes all of us.
It sure does. Well.
All right.
Happy New Year.
Yeah. Let's wrap her up. I'll talk to you soon.
Talk to you later.
Happy knitting, y'all.